This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Danger! Danger!
It's not a lineup, it's not an army, it's not a stable, and it's not a family. It's an alliance of businessmen.
Take it right.
Place to Be Nation, you're listening to the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast, featuring a different way to look at and debate the history of wrestling. And now, your co-host, the PTBN PWO two-man power trip, JT and Will.
The Dangerous Alliance would rather die than surrender to you.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to episode 6 of the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast. I am the host, JT, here on this Wednesday evening. And joining me, as always, my, I almost called him PIC, that's Dr. Skull, my two-man power trip compadre, that is good old Will from Texas. Will, how you doing?
Man, I'm doing good, man. I'm really excited about tonight's show.
Yeah, I am too. We're in some extenuating circumstances. So there's been a really bad storm hit yesterday here in Rhode Island. Took out a bunch of trees, a bunch of power lines. So I am perpetuating the stereotype tonight. I am in my mother-in-law's basement doing the show, and I have my mic. I have my microphone stacked up on a pile of VHS tape. So we are just like, I mean, just really living the dream here for episode 6. But how have you been, Michael?
I'm doing good, man. I wish some of that water would come this way, man. We're in a drought here in Texas, and there is no relief in sight, man. It is hot. I think what we're going on maybe 2 weeks of 100 degrees straight or something. So,
that is hot.
Yeah. Oh, it sucks.
Speaking of hot, we have with us our producer, as always, Dan McGinn. Dan, how are you?
Ow.
Doing all right. You know, we had tornado warnings in my area. We had hail, and the Basil and I, we survived both of them. No problem. No problems at all. So we're ready to go.
Rubbing it hell. In like an asshole.
Man, I'll tell you what, another problem. My wife had hail damage on her car. And there were so many incidents of hail damage that her car's been in the shop for 2 months. So we're one car family right now.
Jeez.
So, yeah, it's been rough.
See, Will, what you got to do is you got to be like me and drive a car from 1998. And then if you get hail damage,
it improves it.
No one will know the difference.
It flattens out the roof for them from all the other dents. So.
My car's getting up there, 2007, man. It's almost a decade, so not quite 19. What'd you say, 1998, Dan?
1998 Buick Century, my friend.
So one of our future challenges should be, like, what was going on when Dan's car was brand new, like in the world of wrestling, the world of sports, you know? Like, the Attitude Era was just beginning.
Mr. McMahon
was just created.
That'll be great, man. Let's do it.
All right. Well, Dan, why don't you go ahead and tell us what challenge number one is?
No chance, that's what you got. Up against a machine too strong. Pretty politicians buying souls for run song.
Guys, the first challenge is Summer Road Trip, and we're talking our favorite wrestling themes. If you're popping it into the tape deck of my Buick, what are we listening to on our way cross-country?
All right, Will, so let's say we're driving from, McGinn's coming to, this jalopy's coming to my house, and we're hopping in the car, we're heading down to see you in Texas, so we're going to come up with the ultimate playlist, and then a couple weeks later, you're coming up to visit us, so you're going to do your playlist too. We'll make one giant one, combine them, mix them all up, and there's going to be all the wrestling themes we can handle on these long trips. Dan, I want you to get the mileage for us for my house to Texas and the Texas to back here.
From San Antonio, Dan.
All right.
Well, I tell you what, though. Now, next year, WrestleMania is in Dallas.
That's right.
So if you want to really make a road trip, man, that'll be the ideal time to do it. I know I'll be driving up to Dallas from San Antonio. So
it is. It's on my maybe list. You know, see how the things are going with the kids and the wife. But it's on my to do. We'll put it that way. It's on my to do to figure it out.
I'll tell you what, though. It's about a 5-hour drive to Dallas.
I'll just meet you right in Dallas. How about that?
I don't know if I can get 5 hours worth of wrestling theme songs that I can listen to in the car.
Oh, we can get 5 hours. That's
I don't know, man. That's rough, man.
Nah, we got it. All right, so give me your, you know, what's your number one here? What popped in your head immediately has to be on this list?
I'll tell you what, man. Number one with a bullet, not even close, just right at the top. The very first song that I thought of when you told me the challenge was something used by Hulk Hogan in the 80s. It was used by Jerry Lawler in the 80s, used by almost every top face in the 80s. Rock and wrestling era, and that is Eye of the Tiger by Survivor.
All right, so we're gonna have that on the list. I'm assuming Dan is keeping track here for us, since he's our producer. He gave us this challenge, so we'll put that on. I think we stay with Hogan because he's had a few good ones, right? So we gotta have Real American on there. I mean, that's a must. And I think we could have Voodoo Child on there too, his NWO Hollywood Hogan song.
Sure. So okay, so which of those do you prefer though, out of those three? Like,
That's a tough one. I mean, I feel dirty not saying Real American, but I think maybe Voodoo Child might be it. That may be my favorite.
I still have to go Eye of the Tiger, man. I just that is getting the whole arena amped up for a fight. It's perfect. It's, you know, if you grew up in the early 80s like I did, watching Rocky 3 was, yep. Eye of the Tiger? Yeah, yep. Rocky 3. Just the entire song screams fight to me, you know, because of the weight of the movie hanging over it. And it just fits. It's just, it's almost like the perfect wrestling song, seriously. And I'll stand by that.
So Dan is confirmed. It's just a hair under 2,000 miles from my Coventry, Rhode Island to San Antonio, Texas. So plenty of songs.
Yeah, I don't think you'll be driving that day.
No, not that one. Sticking with Hogan, one last one. What about his the Hulk Hogan theme from like the wrestling album? Dun, 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 dun. You know, I don't know how long he actually used that song for, but
oh my god, I don't even remember the Hulk Hogan theme.
No. I'll have to pull it up for you while
This isn't like when he first came back to WCW, is it?
No, not the, that's the American Made, which was okay, but not.
Yeah, American Made, that was bad. That was pretty bad because it sounded like Steinerized. It sounded like a man named Sting. You know, it was very generic. It wasn't, you know, I don't know. I really don't like any of those early 90s WCWs. I'm sure I'm going to get shit on for that, but I really don't like any of those early 90s WCW theme songs.
You didn't care for Don't Step to Ron?
Nope, not a fan of that one. You know.
That was Hulk Hogan's theme on the original wrestling album.
Man, I had no idea. I'd never heard that before.
Great song.
And if I did as a kid, I don't remember it. Like, or I put it out of my memory because it sounded like trash. So.
Yeah, it'll get you pumped up. It'll get you pumped.
Not Eye of the Tiger, man. Come on, Eye of the Tiger.
It sounds like almost like they were trying to, when they were trying to maybe move away from the licensed music, they made that kind of sounded like Eye of the Tiger a little bit. Like, it sounds like maybe that was like the plan.
You know what it reminds me of? What's the song from Staying Alive? Not you know, the movie Staying Alive with John Travolta in the 80s.
Yeah.
Stallone's brother sang it. Far From Over. That's what it reminds me of. It reminds me of Far From Over, which is like a Starcade theme song.
I'm sure it was taken from many places and amalgamated into one big Hulk Hogan theme. So also sticking along the Hogan lines, what about the NWO theme song?
Yeah, I'm tired of it already, though. I mean, it's one of those songs like Sweet Child of Mine that I've heard so many times, I never want to hear it again. And I know that if it's being played today, it means Kevin Nash is coming out, and I really don't want to watch Kevin Nash.
Right, how about the Wolfpack theme?
I like the Wolfpack theme.
Yeah, that needs to be on there.
That would be like in my top 10. It's not in my top 5, but I like the Wolfpack. I guess we should just go NWO songs, right? Or and kind of like run down. We already did Voodoo Child, and like, man, with all this Hogan drama coming out and him being a racist, and man, I don't know, man, like it kind of ruins Voodoo Child for me now too, man. Like, Eye of the Tiger, I feel, is bigger than Hogan, but
you don't think Jimi Hendrix is, you know, that the song wasn't established.
Yeah, Jimi Hendrix is bigger than Hogan. I don't know, but as a wrestling theme song, Like, at least, like, with Eye of the Tiger, I can, like, say, yeah, it's Lawler's theme song.
Right. Or Rocky.
Or Rocky, yeah. Voodoo Child.
Well, you had that. You had the end, the main NWO theme. You had the Wolfpack. You also had the B Team, the NWO B Team theme.
They had their own theme?
They did. Well, see, I'm going to take you to school tonight, Will. Wrestling.
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, as an old man, I am prone to forget a lot of things. What about Conan?
That was the B Team theme.
Yeah, that is horrible. Oh. Yeah, that will not be on my road trip playlist.
I'm pretty sure they took all songs from porn movies and just threw them out there. Well, I mean, that's my guess.
What about Conan's raps, man? Bow wow wow, yippee yo, yippee yay. I'm down with
salad
that.
And eat your eggs. What was it? Peel my potatoes.
Peel my potatoes. Man, somebody's gonna get an F jar.
No, we're doing okay.
I don't know. You're treading dangerous territory. Let's see. He did Bow Wow Wow, Yippee Yo, Yippee Yay, Viva La Raza, Every Day, Oil of Olay. As a,
that was disco. That's it. Do you remember the disco version?
But what was the other song he did after that?
He did the crap.
He did a second rap song.
Yeah, no, I know. It was on the album, wasn't it? It was on the Mayhem, the album or something. I can't remember now what the heck it was.
But that one was good too, man. Like,
yeah.
I really liked his themes, man. Bow wow wow, yippee yo, yippee yay. Don't go messing with the wolf pack.
Don't mess with a country boy.
Man. Oh, man. Speaking of country boys, Rap is Crap.
Yes, Rap is Crap has to be on there.
Rap is Crap would be on our playlist.
Absolutely. So, what? I had another. Oh, well, we mentioned Disco. Disco. What about his song, Disco Inferno? Disco Viva.
That's garbage.
Yeah, but it fit him. It was a perfect theme.
It did fit him, but it's not something I'm going to listen to in the car. I'm not going to listen to. If I'm going to actually listen to disco in the car, I'm going to listen to real disco music. I'm going to listen to the Bee Gees. I'm listening to Casey and the Sunshine Band. I'm going real disco, man. I'm not listening to the Disco Inferno theme.
How about Alex Wright's theme? Das Wunderkind.
No, I'm not going to listen to that crap either.
Very divergent tastes here. All right, let's...
Just not, I mean, really, you would listen to that?
Yeah, why not? I'll listen to anything. I don't care.
That like dance music?
Yeah, well, it reminds me of the awesome Alex Wright doing the little shimmy that he did when he came down to the ring, you know? All right, let's try and ground ourselves here. How about the theme you hear at the beginning of this episode every time, and that's the Hollywood Blondes theme?
Yeah, that's okay. I like that. That's fine.
You're supposed to say you love it because it's our song.
Oh. Okay, I love it.
Attaboy.
It's awesome.
All right, let's go for the heavy hitters then. What about Jive Soul Bro, a little slick?
Sure. Why not?
You're killing me.
Yeah,
these songs you're supposed to be excited about.
Okay, no.
Million Dollar Man?
No. See, these are all your WWF-centric songs, the ones you grew up on when you were watching.
We just did all WCW ones. Just did all WCW songs.
I know, but now you're getting into a territory. See, you're getting into a territory of WWF when I stopped watching WWF.
Yeah, but
you got to remember, like, when Slick was doing Jive Soul Bro, when JYD.
I feel like you didn't have to watch at the time to appreciate Jive Soul Bro. I mean, that's just a great song.
But hold on. See, I'm getting to a point here. Let me finish. JYD was doing Grab Them Cakes, right?
Yeah.
Around this time. Okay? Garbage. Because to me, older fan, JYD is synonymous with one song.
Another One Bites the Dust.
Another One Bites the Dust. I put that song in on my car just to listen to it to go to work.
Well, see, that's what we need to differentiate, though. Let's talk wrestling themes. I mean,
to me, that's a wrestling theme, though. See,
that's a real song. I mean, you'd hear that on the radio
anyway.
But that's
the difference between you and me, JR, is that I remember watching wrestling when real songs were the theme.
No, I know,
they
I know.
Came
I do
out
too.
To the real songs.
All right, so let's. Here's a guy that had a bunch of good songs, in my mind anyway, and that's Rick Rude. Okay, so Rude had
Yes,
Rude had "Smooth Operator" by Sade.
Perfect theme song.
He had his original WWF theme, like the striptease theme, and then he had another version of the striptease theme, and then he goes to WCW and has the phenomenal "Simply Ravishing," a guy that had tremendous themes across the board.
See, and sticking to. Are you know, and I like Rick Rude's theme songs. I always thought they fit him, even the WCW one. But you know which song I'm going to pick out of those, right?
And I'm not disagreeing with you. Smooth Operator is pretty awesome.
Smooth Operator is a great song for Rick Rude to come out to.
Yes, you know? And that was world-class. Did he use it just world-class, or did he use it when he went to NWA, too?
No, because when he went to the NWA, him and Manny Fernandez teamed up as R&R, and they used Queen's We Will Rock You as their song.
So it was world-class with Smooth Operator.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. All right. Well, give me a couple. Give me a couple more here. Oh, how about well, here's one. Here's one you'll like. It's a real song, to me, synonymous with wrestling, Tom Sawyer.
Oh, easily. Oh, man, we could do all of Texas. Think about this. So Kerry Von Erich comes out to Tom Sawyer, right? Then they come out one day that they came out all together to LaGrange from ZZ Top, okay? And then Kevin or David, I forget which one, then came out to Ted Nugent's Stranglehold.
Yes. Yep.
Okay. And see, I could listen to all three of those songs I can listen to on the way to Dallas every day. Back and forth, all three. And then you got to go with the dynamic duo playing, Chris Adams and Gino Hernandez playing George Thorogood's Bad to the Bone. And so I'm going to listen to Bad to the Bone every day. And then you're going to have the Freebirds, who came out to multiple songs. You want to have a real wrestling song? Number two behind Eye of the Tiger, Bad Street USA.
Yes.
By far and away.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to just go strictly wrestling, okay, no outside interference from like actual real songs, Bad Street USA is the best wrestling song ever made.
How about the Fabulous Rougeau Brothers?
No. What are you talking about?
All American Boys.
Fantastic. Oh, man, we're talking Bad Street USA, and you pull out the Rougeau brothers? Come on, man. Put it this way. Okay, before they did Bad Street, you know they did Freebird, right? Leonard Skinner's Freebird.
Yep.
Okay? And there's a great video. If everybody goes to YouTube, type up Terry Gordy Freebird. Maybe type in Terry Gordy Tribute Freebird or something. There's a great video edit a buddy of mine did to nothing but Terry Gordy footage with Freebird as the song. And it's just wonderful, like career retrospective of Terry Gordy to the Freebird song. But then they did Willie Nelson's Georgia on My Mind as well. So they went from Freebird and Willie Nelson's Georgia on My Mind to Bad Street USA. Maybe the greatest progression of rock and roll songs or theme songs for a wrestler ever with the Fabulous Freebirds. Not even close. Nothing else comes close.
Not even, let's see, what do we got? I mean, William Regal's had some good songs, right? He's a guy that's had some really good ones. Oh, yeah.
He's only had that British theme song.
Well, he had a couple of versions of it, but he also had a really good one in WCW. The really noble, dun, 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 shh, that one. That was a good one.
That always sounded like really powerful. Like, with that song, what's weird about that song is it always felt like, and I'm one of the biggest William Regal, Steven Regal fans alive, right? Just love the guy, love the guy's career, think he's one of the best wrestlers of all time. That song always felt more important than the way WCW positioned him. Would you agree? Like, when that song came out, you always felt like a main eventer was coming out, and then Regal would come out and like wrestle a Ranger Ross or something,
yes.
You know, in like some scrub match. So that song always felt a little bit more important than William Regal's station. But I agree. He did. You know what? WWF theme song I enjoyed, a Real Man's Man.
Yes, there you go.
That's a good theme song. Okay, I like that one, and I don't even know what theme he used. Some generic new metal right after he came back for the last run. Do you know?
No, I don't.
Okay, so what's on our list so far? We got Eye of the Tiger, Another One Bites the Dust, every Texas theme song ever. Including Iceman King Parsons, We Are Family.
Rap is Crap.
Rap is Crap.
Jive Soul Bro.
Jive Soul Bro, sure.
The Recruit Collection.
Not Grab Them Cakes though, right? We're tossing.
No, I'm good with no Grab Them Cakes. The Rick Rude Collection. It's gonna be on there.
That has to be, especially Smooth Operator because it's world class.
And I'm putting All American Boys on there. I don't care what you say.
Well, and I hate this wrestler, but what about Immigrant Song for Bruiser Brody?
Yeah, that's another good one. Should definitely include that. I would say you don't like Bruiser Brody.
No.
Okay.
No, not a big Bruiser. We can have a Bruiser Brody conversation some other time, but okay. Yeah, I'm not a Bruiser. I think the people that make him out to be a legend have highly overrated him.
Mm-hmm.
And out of all the footage I've seen, I've always been underwhelmed. Now, I'm not saying that he hasn't had great performances or good career moments. I just think that the aura of Bruiser Brody is better than the actual wrestler. And I'd say the same thing for guys like Tiger Mask and Dynamite Kid, too. But, I mean, that's another conversation for another day. I want to keep this positive because we're on a road trip mission.
Well, how about a couple recent ones that I like a lot? Rusev's theme, to me, one of the best ones they have and have made in a while. Especially his entrance of Mania with the tank and that song playing in the background.
Yeah, that was fun.
Cool. And what about the song that Swagger and Cesaro used, the Patriot one?
Unbelievable. Well, I mean, I'm not going to listen to that in my car, man. Not enough beat to it, you know. Just too dark.
You're dark.
I'll tell you what. Let's talk. Recent songs. CM Punk's use of Living a Cult of Personality.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yep, no brainer there.
We could do that one. We could do. I can't do any John Cena theme songs.
Not even his old Basic Thugonomics.
Nope. Can't do The Time Is Now, The Time Is Here.
How about Triple H? He's had a plethora of songs.
No, well, see, here's the thing, man. You
get the Motorhead logo on your little Skype thing here.
I do. I have the Motorhead logo everywhere, man. You will not find a bigger Motorhead fan in the world. But it just so happens that the worst Motorhead songs are Triple H theme songs. It's like they really scraped the bottom of the barrel in the Motorhead catalog to give this guy some theme songs.
My favorite is when they play live for him and he could, it's obvious Lemmy doesn't know the words. He's just kind of,
time to play the game. Yeah. And Lemmy's, I've seen Motorhead perform several times in concert. Amazing live. You know what they should do? Motorhead plays a live version of Twisted Sister, Shoot 'Em Down. And they should just re-record that song, you know, in the studio, and then give that to Triple H. And that would be my favorite Triple H theme song of all time. I'm a huge Motorhead fan, man. I just think that Motorhead gave him the scraps because they have a lot of songs about fighting and war and destruction and, you know, death, a lot of death songs. They could have given Triple H any of those. Instead, they gave him, you know, The King of Kings and The Game and just horrible songs from Motorhead. Like it would be like Motorhead's D sides, not even their B sides, more like their D sides.
What about having them do our theme song? You think they would do it? I mean, they seem pretty cool about doing theme songs.
Probably not.
They do love bugs on BDBN.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, I'm going to come play live at my cookout next time.
We might be able to get John Cena to rap our theme song.
Yes.
You're up there in the Northeast, man. That's John Cena country. Maybe you'll run into him at the shopping center, you know, the grocery store. You know,
if Bella comes along, we'll make it happen.
Now, would you agree with this? Almost every woman's theme song has been horrible.
Let's see. Well, I mean, who's Sasha Banks is pretty good.
It's too new. It's not, but it's okay. Not really.
Sunny? You didn't like Sunny's?
With the little tigers?
That was Sable. Sable had the tiger.
What was Sunny's? Generic 90s Vince.
I know you want me, baby. There's that one.
Nah, I don't remember that song, man.
Who else? Definitely not China's. Don't treat me like a woman.
Oh my goodness!
I don't know who. I mean, Trish. I mean, hers wasn't bad. No, Lita.
Just garbage.
Victoria.
That's sad, too, because Lita's like the super punk rock fan. You would think that she would have had cool music, you know. But I don't remember her.
Victoria had Tattoo. Remember? That was a big deal at the time.
I don't. You mean Tattoo, like the
lesbians,
group
the fake lesbians? Yes.
Really?
All the things like, she said? That was her song.
T-A-T-U?
Yeah, the fake lesbian punk women. Whatever the hell they were.
10 minutes to go, guys, and I would vote for Tattoo.
They were Russian chicks, man.
Yeah, Russian. Fake lesbian Russians.
Oh, okay, so let me get out some songs that are non-wrestling centric, okay? Because in the 80s...
Ass Man?
The Rock... Ass Man. No, man, I'm not going to do that one. We're not doing the...
The one,
Mick
Billy
Foley, the Mick Foley song or the one or... Yeah, we're not doing any DX songs.
Okay,
because, I mean...
Johnny B. Bad?
Well, you were there for WrestleMania 15, right? When DX... Or 14, when DX played live, right?
I was not there, nope.
Oh, okay. Dude, that band was horrible. That DX band?
Yeah. You didn't like when they did the national anthem?
Oh, just embarrassingly bad, right?
It was.
It was pathetic. No Kid Rock. No Limp Bizkit. No Roland. Okay. No Creed.
Girls in Cars.
Who did Girls in Cars?
That was Strike Force. That was it Derringer? No, yeah, I think it was Derringer did Girls in Cars.
That's sad too, man, because you know Rick Derringer actually wrote a couple of like rock and roll classics, right?
Oh yeah,
like,
Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo, wasn't that him?
And he did Hang on Sloopy too from the '60s. Yeah. So
oh no, it wasn't Rick Derringer. It was Robbie Dupree did the Girls in Cars. Robbie Dupree.
So anyway, Rock and Roll Express did I Love Rock and Roll from Joan Jett, and they did Rock and Roll is King. Then the Fabulous Ones did Everybody Wants You from Billy Squier. See, that's right up my alley, man. All that early 80s, like classic rock, like that middle of the road classic rock, man.
You didn't give me an answer on Johnny B. Bad.
No.
The American Males?
We're not doing Johnny Bad. We're also eliminating DDP's Self High Five because it's just a Nirvana song. We're eliminating Chris Jericho's theme because it's just Pearl Jam's Even Flow.
All right, so here's an area we can go we haven't talked about. ECW.
ECW.
So we got Shane Douglas, right? Perfect Strangers.
We're taking Perfect Strangers out.
Tommy Dreamer, Man in the Box.
I'm not opposed to that song, except that I've heard it so much.
Enter Sandman?
Same thing. Heard it too many times.
So let's just leave ECW then, because you're going to say that about every song, probably. they're all overplayed.
Except, what was New Jack's song?
Oh, Natural Born Killers? Yeah, that's good.
Natural Born Killers, man. I can listen to that all day long.
Yeah, that's on there. That's very highly ranked.
Yeah, I'm all about Natural Born Killers, man.
Big Show? How about the Big Show?
Oh, that sucks. He sucks. His song sucks. Kane's theme song sucks. I'm tired of hearing it. We've heard it for 20 years.
Well, see, now you're just blaming it. It's not his fault. You know, it's an okay song.
But after you hear it for 20 years, you want it to go away.
Yeah, it doesn't make it a bad song.
No, but it's not a song I'm going to drive to. It's a song that I'm going to be depressed and shoot myself over. Like, oh, no, Kane's theme song, let me kill me. It's not
Blue World Order.
What's that?
The Blue World Order, BWO.
Well, didn't they do Kiss's Rock and Roll All Night? Wasn't that their song?
They may use it at some point, but they had their own theme was really good.
Okay, they dressed up as Kiss. I remember that.
Yes, they did do that.
Who else is?
That's the BWO theme.
That was kind of cool, man. That
it
was.
It's a good song.
Cool. I liked it.
What about Ricky Steamboat, Family Man?
No.
The worst.
But you know what? I'm all about Cyrus. Sirius. Yeah. Wasn't it Sirius?
Was it Cyrus or Sirius?
I think it's Sirius.
Look it up, Dan.
S-I-R-I.
I didn't think there was a second S, but I could be wrong. The Ricky Steamboat one is absurd, though. Is Ricky Steamboat the dragon? If you go back and listen to that song, it sounds just like, what the hell was the other song? Is it Rhythm of the Rain? There's some other song that it's like, if you listen to the beat, it's like exactly the same. It's some absurd like light rock song. I think it's Rhythm of the Rain if you listen to the two songs. What do you think of the Nationals, like national anthem kind of songs, like Dino Bravo?
Or Nikolai Volkov or
British Bulldogs.
I'm definitely not listening to any of those songs in the car. Never going to listen to those in the car.
It is serious. All right. You're right. Sorry. Pretty Wonderful.
I don't remember that song.
All right. Here's one because I know you're a big fan of the Stud Stable. How about Kurt Weill Park and the Stud Stable scene?
Not in the car, man. Maybe what was
I am not driving with you to WrestleMania.
Well, yeah, I'm doing Iron Man. Okay.
Yeah, that's a good. Yeah, you gotta have Iron Man. Demolition. Come on, you got at least like the theme.
I like the theme song. I just wish it had a better wrestler than Barry Darso.
That's the Stud Stable.
That was good. That was good. I liked it.
See, put it on in the car.
I would put that on the car only because I don't remember that song. So it would be new to me.
That's pretty wonderful. Early 90s WCW had some decent stuff. I know you crapped on it before.
Okay, man, so come on. Steinerized, the Ricky Steamboat horrible song, A Man Named Sting. Those are really bad songs. What was the other one we were talking about earlier?
Don't Step to Ron.
Don't Step to Ron. Come on, that's horrible. It's not good stuff.
Well, and the worst part, too, is it replaced the awesome The Doom song that Simmons used as a face to for a bit, the saxophone kind of jazzy song. That was a really good song. I like that one.
Yeah, that was all right. So has anyone actually been paying attention to the songs we're using here?
I think Dan's been trying. He's doing a good job. He's got a lot on here. He added You Look So Good to Me.
Is our stream of consciousness, is it too much, Dan?
No, I think he got a lot of them. He added You Look So Good to Me. I think that's a personal favorite of his, Billy and Chuck.
See, how do you remember this stuff, man? Like,
all right, so there's two things. One is I'm a wrestling theme savant, so I could list you like thousands off the top of my head.
Are you one of those guys who, like, if you did name your tune, you could name the tunes in like three
wrestling
notes
themes
or less?
Yes. If I was on Brainbuster and it was one giant name that wrestling theme tune, I would destroy everyone. The other thing is we did a tournament recently, and I have a giant master list that I'm just reading off of. So I didn't want to go inside baseball on you, but here we are. So we did a big tournament, PlaceMeNation.com, if you remember. Hulk Hogan won. He defeated Stone Cold in the finals.
See, Stone Cold is sweet child of mine to me, man. Not going to listen to Stone Cold song.
2 minutes to go, guys. And I was more looking for Rico's theme on the You Look So Good to Me, to be honest.
Well, yeah, give us a few more, Dan. I mean, we could do Ernest Miller / Brodus Clay, Somebody Call My Mama.
I like that
song. You know what, man? WrestleMania, what was Rock versus Cena? WrestleMania 28?
Yeah.
Is that the first one?
Yep.
The with the good match between the two. When Brodus Clay came out to that thing, man, that was okay. It was fun.
By the way, another new one.
I know people at home shit on it, man, but live, it was really fun.
One more new one we didn't mention, Bray Wyatt, who I think is really good.
Yeah, that's a great theme song. Props to my buddy Rob Naylor for actually helping Bray come up with that song.
And we also didn't mention American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, and I know he had a couple other ones that were really good as well.
Oh, his best one was another song, Midnight Rider by Willie Nelson.
Yep.
Dream came out to that one. That was great. And the You Can't Tell the Book by the Cover from Hank Williams Jr., which is he came out to like in 86, 87.
That was Sexy Boy, Shawn Michaels, we haven't mentioned. No Chance in Hell.
You know what? I'm going to say Sexy Boy, sung by Sherry Martel, belongs on there.
Yes, I agree with that. No Chance in Hell is going to be on there.
No Chance in Hell, that song ever gets played in my car, ever. It's garbage, man. It's garbage.
No Chance in Hell is garbage? Come on.
Because I associate it with garbage wrestling. And I associate it with the McMahons, who are garbage, who actively bring down my enjoyment of wrestling.
Even the original Mr. McMahon in 1998, when Dan's car was coming off the assembly line.
Yeah, don't like it. Hate it, hate it, hate it, hate it.
We're not driving.
It reminds me of Vince Russo, and anything that reminds me of Vince Russo is not being played in my car.
All right, Harlem Heat, Booker T. Can we close on that song. One? Okay,
good. That is a great song.
We're ending there, then.
All right, fellas. All right. I was going to also go with Doink's heel theme, but I'm sure I'll get thrown out of the car after that.
Yes, that's because you're a clown. all right, so why don't we go ahead? We'll take a break. You know, I think we listed a heck of a lot of theme songs. If we missed any, you can tweet at us at place2bnation or hit us up on Facebook or prowrestlingonly.com message board. But in the meantime, let's take a break. We'll come back with challenge number two.
To the mind of a maniac, doomed to be a killer since I came out the nutsack. I'm in a murderous mind state with a heart full of terror. I see the devil in the mirror.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out myself and Scott Criscolo on The Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you there, including Main Events, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Shows, and Wrestling with Optimism, which focuses on the positives of the business. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave's Wrestling Culture podcast, our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance podcast starring myself and Pro Wrestling Only's Will, diving into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to dive into as well. We feature The Extra Point with Scott Criscolo and Dr. G, The Kings of Sport featuring Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, The Sports Lounge hosted by Cowboy and Cowboy Sr., as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes year-round deep dive into pro hoops. PTBN also proudly features Richard and the Mailman podcast, which specializes in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN is also home to the tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments, and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island in Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats, RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
And he's 12 years old, and tomorrow she'll be a whore. Nobody ever told her it's the wrong way. Don't be afraid with the quickness you get laid. For your family, get paid, it's the wrong way.
All right, Place to Be Nation, we're back. Hope you enjoyed the little break. We're talking to you about all the shows available to you on the Place to Be podcast feed on iTunes and at PlaceToBeNation.com. And our first falls in the book, our first challenge, of course, is our Summer Road Trip Wrestling playlist. Went through thousands and thousands of wrestling songs, and we saw thousands and thousands more. We were commenting how that was like the quickest half hour we've had recording. We could have went 6 hours. So maybe we'll revisit that. Maybe we'll do like a holiday playlist and we'll revisit it. But all right, Dan. Tell us, what is challenge number two?
All right, for your second challenge, we are going to create a stable. Will it compete with the NWO or DX? We will see. Guys, take it away.
I would say, would it compete with the Dangerous Alliance or Devastation Incorporated?
Nothing compares to the Dangerous Alliance, Will. It's Media Buddy, number one.
Well, let me tell you why I came up with this idea. Because recently, Steve Corino started doing a show again with Dan McGinn here on Place to Be, right? Correct?
Yep. In theory, okay. Yes. Yep.
Okay, in theory. Well, you know, a few years ago, when I was doing a podcast with Rob Naylor, Corino was actually a guest on our podcast, Goodwill Wrestling, and we did entire show for we talked to Steve for about 45 minutes on our favorite stables growing up. And so I thought it'd be fun just to create stables that we'd like to see. And we could do it from time frames, like say, okay, in the 80s, what stable would you have liked to see formed? We could like create a new Four Horsemen if you'd like to do that. Or we could create a stable from wrestlers, you know, from different time periods. So we can go any direction. Now, for me, in order to have a great stable, you're going to have somebody leading that stable. And so I'm talking Paul Heyman for the Dangerous Alliance, right?
Yep.
I'm talking in 1986 UWF, Eddie Gilbert leading the Russians against Bill Watts and his crew. You know, we're talking, look at the Four Horsemen. You had all four of them could talk on their own, but then you had J.J. Dillon handling the business side. In Memphis, in the very early 80s, you had the Jimmy Hart's First Family. And really, the wrestlers in the First Family were interchangeable because they were. They would go in Memphis, do a month or two, disappear, but Jimmy Hart was the one constant. So, but you always associated the First Family with Jimmy Hart. In the peak of 80s WWF, Bobby Heenan's family, you know, with King Kong Bundy, Andre, Big John Studd, like he always had his stable of wrestlers to battle, you know, the imposter Hulk Hogan. So I thought we could create some cool stables. And we don't have to limit ourselves, like I said, to a certain time period. What do you think, JR?
I love it. Let's do it.
Okay. So if you were going to head up a stable and you needed to bring in a manager or a lead figurehead to do the talking, who's the first guy on your list, JR?
It's going to be Paul Lee or Bobby for me.
Pick one, because we're gonna create a stable.
All right, let's go serious first, and then we'll kind of do more of a... Not that the Heenan family wasn't serious, but... to me, that, you know, Paul and the Dangerous Alliance was one of the most serious stables out there. It was just okay. A bunch of legit wrestlers that just were out there to destroy WCW.
And so now that we have Paul Lee, okay, because Paul Lee's been all over. He's been a manager in Crockett, right? He's been a manager in the AWA. He's been the focal point of ECW. So what region of the country do we want this stable to be in? Because, you know, depending on the region is going to depend how we construct the stable.
All right, so let me ask you this. Can we use guys from any time and territory? Like
territory.
All right, so why don't we put him the one place he never was? Let's put him in late 80s WWF.
Okay, so we're going to put him in late 80s WWF.
He's trying to take down Hulk Hogan.
He's going to take down Hulk Hogan or Macho Man, right? We can have him take down... So Macho Man cannot be part of Paulie's stable.
Okay.
So
he was one of the guys I was going to put in, but okay.
Well, I mean, if we're putting him in that
WWF. No, that's fine. That's fine. Let's go with it.
Unless we're breaking up the mega powers, right? And I always feel that the stable has to have that main event challenger, right? And we know that Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage were both main event faces. So who are we going to put as their main event challenger? And like I said, do you want to stick to wrestlers from that time period, or do you want to go any era?
No, I guess we should stick in the time period. Because, I mean, if you're going any era with Paul, I'd put Brock, like, number one. That'd be awesome. But let's stick with the era, but it could be from any promotion. Like, they could have jumped ship. So it doesn't just have to be WWE.
Okay, I like that. Okay. So what you need is you need that main event player. Ric Flair and the Horsemen. Rick Rude and the Dangerous Alliance. Okay? I'm going to pick a guy that if we get him before he completely deteriorates, before his wife has health problems, I'm going to pick Nikita Koloff as Paulie's guy that he brings in
I like it. And another guy I'd like to include, maybe not in this incarnation, right? So maybe Nikita gets a run, and then, you know, what, he blows his chance and he gets kicked out and he gets replaced by a new, you know, big kind of muscled up guy, and that's Lex Luger. Like, I think Luger led by Heyman, you know, as a main foe for Hogan or Savage could have been pretty cool. Like,
oh, I like it. I like it a lot. So are Lex Luger and Nikita going to be in this stable at the same time?
No, maybe Luger comes in like towards the end of Nikita's run, and then he kind of usurps control when Nikita is out of chances and sees the light.
Well, here's another guy I'm thinking, okay? Because we usually think of Vader coming in 1992, 91 WCW, right?
Yeah.
Vader around the late 80s was actually making a huge splash in Japan and beating up on Antonio Inoki and Riki Choshu and Fujinami and those guys. So I'm thinking if you want to debut a star, a guy that was in AWA as, you know, as a Big Leon or whatever his name was, the baby bull. But you want to make a big star, a guy's going to make a big splash, who's going to break Randy Savage's leg or ribs. I'm bringing in Vader as a part of the stable.
I like it. We'll beat WCW to the punch by 7 years. The Mega Powers versus Vader that they did. Yeah.
And so what I like about this, okay, is that whether it's with Nikita or Luger in this time period, all right, if you're doing them with Luger, then you just got two big guys. One who's like the big brute, nasty kind of. He's not fat, but he's definitely. Well, I mean, he's fat, but he's not a roid guy, right? Okay, but you put him with a roid guy, and they look like a credible tag team.
Yep.
You know, or you can have Vader as your singles guy, pair Nikita up with Luger as your roided up tag team.
So, okay. I feel like we need a worker. And, you know,
you mean like a little guy who can bump around and.
Well, not even that yet. So that's going to be our fifth guy. But for number four, I'm picturing someone in like the Bobby Eaton role, just the kind of quiet veteran who just comes in and works well. And you need someone in, you know, I'm not. Eaton was probably I guess Austin was kind of the fifth ranked guy. But think of a guy that would take the fall in a lot of the matches that we need. I'm thinking like Greg Valentine, 88. So. A stalwart veteran, you know, dangerously trusts him. He's had matches with Hogan before. They need kind of a silent assassin that's not going to have an ego or run his mouth. He just is their workhorse of the group. So I picture Valentine being that guy who can take the falls, who can lose and not have it matter.
And it's going to re-energize his career. Because remember, I mean, Valentine, after his great feud with Tito, was kind of fading.
Right.
They didn't really put him in a featured position. So I like that too.
And you could put Tito on Hogan and Savage's side, you know, because he's got the natural rivalry with Valentine now.
And when we're setting up like a natural Survivor Series match here.
Right.
Right? Yeah. And so who would be like that last guy?
Okay. So I have one for you.
Who are we looking at?
So Dangerous Alliance had Steve Austin. He was kind of like the young gun, the brash, cocky guy, the worker of the group. And they were all workers, but, you know, he's like the young guy that would bounce all around. Like the guy you mentioned, that would bump all around and do all that kind of stuff. What about fresh out of Stampede, shortly heading to WCW? Eventually, we know he could be a great heel, but maybe we tap into that a little bit earlier. He could fly around. He's in the prime athletically of his career, and that's Brian Pillman.
Ooh, in the late 80s?
Yeah, 88, 89, they bring him in as a surprise guy, and here's this brash, young, cocky dude. Maybe you put the Hart Foundation on Hogan's side, too. They play up some of the Stampede stuff. Oh, you know, we know that guy. You know, we helped train him, and now here he is, stuff like that. Yeah.
I like it because if you put Pillman as a tag team partner with any of these guys, well, if you team him up with Luger and Nikita, you basically have your little guy who's going to fly and then your big muscle guy, kind of like your Dynamite Davey kind of combo. If you put him with Vader, then you put your monster with your little guy. Then basically, Brian Pillman can just hide behind Vader and talk trash all day. Or you can put him with the veteran, Greg Valentine, against the tag team that you want to put over. Like, you're going to put a tag team over. Maybe it's your best friend's Demolition, you know, who I would never put over any of these guys. But whatever, you know, they were there. Or you want to put Strikeforce over. You could do that credibly against Greg Valentine and Brian Pillman.
And so, how about the freshly debuted Rockers?
Sure.
Rockers versus Pillman and Valentine.
Oh, Rockers versus Luger and Nikita, with Luger and Nikita just destroying the little guys.
I want to see Vader versus Tito. That's a match I want now. So our new Dangerous Alliance, going after the Mega Powers in 1988, led by Paul E., we have Vader, Nikita Koloff, Lex Luger, Brian Pillman, Greg Valentine.
And just because it's the 80s, we're going to call them the Dangerous Express.
There you go. The Dangerous Express. I like it. All right, so I'm going to throw out the second one to you, and I want you to name me the first couple guys you'd put on.
Let's do it.
All right, so let's go a decade later to WCW, and the NWO is just forming. You have Scott Hall, you have Kevin Nash, and Hulk Hogan coming out of Bash of the Beach. Let's add the next four or five guys to the NWO other than
Holiday. Can I take people from WWF?
Yep, you can take whoever you want from the time, as long as they were active, you know, in 96-ish.
Wow. Okay. So the thing about the New World Order that kind of bothered me is that, for being so new, they had a lot of old guys, right? It really bugged me. And so I don't mind putting X-Pac in there as like that part of the group, okay? Because he fit that group.
Yes.
But I am not. I'm not bringing Bret Hart over. I'm not bringing Shawn Michaels over. Okay. What I'm going to do is I am going to go to ECW. And I'm thinking that we get somebody from ECW. And I'm thinking if you want somebody who could have used a kind of a spike in his career, was having the best year of his career, I'm going to call, or he leaves WWF because he's tired of playing an antiquated funk dancer. I'm taking Too Cold Scorpio.
I like it. I think he'd be a good fit as a guy in that X-Pac role.
And we know that in ECW he could be a great heel.
Right.
So, you know, Too Cold Scorpio, he could fit as like one of those bitter WWF guys, was there as Flash Funk. It's like, man, I don't want that. I want the serious wrestling.
What about Shane Douglas brought in looking to take down WCW and Ric Flair because he didn't give him a shot in the early 90s? I mean, you know, guy who could talk.
I think the only problem you have there is that he had issues with the Click and WWF. True. So I think him and Bam Bam are guys like ideally you'd think, oh, man, they would work, right? But they really wouldn't, you know? Here, how about this guy?
Raven?
Nope, Raven's too small. And I think he doesn't – I don't know. I don't think he really fits with the idea of the NWO. I like the idea of NWO Japan, okay? But I don't know if, like, same thing. Muto and Chono, are they really the guys you want in your NWO? I don't know. I would pick, I'm trying to get somebody who would be disillusioned with the WWF. You know who I like? And it's only because he's one of my favorite wrestlers. Maybe someone like Tracy Smothers. And I don't know if any of y'all would care for that, but to me, Too Cold Scorpio and Tracy Smothers could team up. Tracy could talk, which we found out on the indies.
Yep.
He's a little Southern, so he's not going to turn away the WCW fans. He's a guy who can eat falls. He's not going to overshadow the big guys, but he's going to give you some good work rate matches.
I agree. And I think those, you know, I think
Him that promo, I'm sorry, JR. If you give him that promo time, he can talk about being embarrassed as Billy Joe Floyd and make little shoe comments and whatever. So I'm sorry, go.
No, and I like the idea. I think he's going to come in a little later. Like if he's going to fill out the group, I think the next few have to be, and not that he's really good. We just need name guys. I think for the next couple.
That's oh, okay. Well, I was looking at trying to improve the NWO.
Oh yeah, no, I think he should definitely be part of it. So maybe he comes in. So who do we add so far? We have him. And we've added who else?
Well, we've Scorpio. Got Too Cold right. Scorpio, okay. Trace Smothers.
So we have Hall, Nash, Hogan. Let's find one more big name, then Scorpio. One more big name, then Smothers. How about that?
Okay, so who would you think of as a big name? Like, who's really going to make an impact besides, like, a Bret or Shawn?
All right, so maybe not big name. I should rephrase. Known name. And not that Tracy Smothers wasn't known, but, you know, he was known to the hardcore fans. But we need someone that was a little bit more.
No, I agree with that. I just like the idea of bringing in – because remember when we did the – December 1996, right. What if we talked about guys like Smothers and Scorpio being wasted that year and how Vince was in a full blown gimmick land. So who else is there? I mean, Barry Windham's kind of old and broken down.
So we mentioned not using Bret Hart, and we mentioned, well, we didn't mention here, but it was always rumored at the time, like British Bulldog. But what about Owen Hart?
I like Owen Hart. Everybody likes Owen Hart. He's not going to overshadow. He can team with anybody.
Right.
Right.
Yep.
Literally. If you want to put him with the two new guys we just mentioned, he could team with them, or he could team with the big guys. Obviously they're going to make him eat the fall. He's a cocky heel. I like that. I like Owen Hart. I actually like Owen Hart better as a member than Bret Hart.
Yeah, you know? I do too. So maybe we have him come in as the big surprise fourth. You know, here's Owen Hart. and then you have Scorpio join. Who do you use instead of, you know, instead of like DiBiase or Bischoff? Is there anyone else you would use as kind of like a mouthpiece or, you know, backer or money man?
If he was healthy and sober, I like the idea of Bobby Heenan leaving the booth to join the NW, but he's an old man.
And he's not going to side with Hogan either, remember? Lifelong Hogan hater.
Yeah, that's true too. Jimmy Hart was past his prime. That's the problem, right, man. A lot of that's kind of an era where we no longer get managers, right? That they go away from this idea of managers, and the managers that are left are all kind of outdated. Your Jim Cornette's outdated.
Yeah, he would have been awful with that. I mean, that's where DiBiase kind of worked. I mean, he had kind of a rough run in the Dirty F as a manager, but he was believable in the role as kind of the financial backer of the group.
You know, the only problem is they're guys that were burned by WCW, like Goldust, Vader. Like, Vader would have been a great member of the NWO as kind of a bruiser, but he left WCW in such a bad way, you know, just jobbing to Hogan month after month. I don't know if it's just too soon to bring, like, Vader back. But as a mouthpiece, Paul Roma, like, there really isn't anybody. I mean, Bischoff was a good heel. I just think that he just became overbearing over time. Same thing with DiBiase. I don't know. I kind of think that if you have Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, and Hogan, you don't really need a mouthpiece. I think that's kind of why they've ditched DiBiase. You know, what about bringing Scott Steiner in a lot earlier than they did?
Yeah, I think you could have done that. I think the last year and a half of the Steiner brothers was really running on gas.
Really, really bad matches.
So yeah. Here's the list of the original NWO. Here's everyone. So you got Hall, Nash, Hogan, DiBiase, Nick Patrick, The Giant, NWO Sting, Six, Vincent, Miss Elizabeth, Eric Bischoff, Buff Bagwell, Michael Wall Street, Big Bubba Rogers, Scott Norton, Masahiro Chono, Randy Savage, Dennis Rodman, The Great Muta, Tenzan, Conan, Kurt Hennig, Rick Rude, Louis Spicoli, Dusty Rhodes, Brian Adams, The Disciple, and Scott Steiner.
See, how many of those guys just don't belong on that list?
Most.
Man? Most, right?
I mean, Hennig and Rude were cool, but they kind of came in a little too late for it. You know what I mean? Like, maybe Hennig in 96, maybe he's the mouthpiece. Because remember, he wasn't wrestling again yet.
That's
so maybe
true,
he comes in as the guy that's kind of the lifelong WWF guy that's here to take out. You know, he has a natural feud with Flair, and then eventually you bait him into the ring after being the mouthpiece for a while.
Yeah, and I kind of want to keep Rick Rude away from being a mouthpiece because I thought he was actively bad as a mouthpiece, as a manager.
Yeah, he was better as a bodyguard, like he was a little bit with DX before he left.
But, you know, every time he got on the mic, he just sounded really out of date.
Yeah.
Like time had passed him by, like he was an old man. I like it. You know, I think putting guys like Smothers, Owen in there, even like Steiner – I think the idea is that you're putting guys who can go, who are able to have a continuation of the story. You know, I mean, I understand putting your Mike Rotundos and your Big Bossmans in there, but they were old guys.
Right.
You know, they were old. They were used up, where your Scorpio, Smothers, Owen Hart, if they leave WWF, well, they're angry too. And they can fill out that B team role and be much better in the ring.
And that's what I got the most ridiculous was at the end of 96 when they'd open the floodgates. And then remember they shut down membership and they kicked Wall Street out. And then he was just like anti-WCW.
Right. He would wear like a t-shirt with WCW crossed out with a Ghostbuster sign.
Awful.
Yeah, pathetic. Yeah. So I like it. I like our version of the NWO much better with Hogan, Hall, Nash, Scorpio, Smothers, Owen Hart, and Scott Steiner.
And
I guess
perfect.
And
if you, Mr. Perfect.
Imperfect, and if you threw Waltman in there, I would not object.
Right.
The Giant, I think the problem the Giant has is the same problem that he's had his whole career. You flip him, you flip him back, you flip him, you flip him back.
They screwed up with the Giant because he shouldn't have been the champion that lost to Hogan. And then that makes no sense when he turns. So what you do is you never take the belt off Flair in early 96. You have Hogan beat Flair for the title. And then you have Giant turn. It's a little bit more believable. Instead, they had Hogan beat Giant, and like a month later, he turns and joins him. That's what made him look stupid.
No, I agree with that. But and that's really been the curse of Big Show slash giant. Paul White's career, his whole career, right? So I like that. So let's do an all-time stable.
Okay.
Okay. And so all-time, if you're going to give me all-time, my mouthpiece is going to be Jimmy Hart's First Family. So we're going to create a First Family, because if you ever get a chance, JR, watch Jimmy Hart in early Memphis. And we just did an Exile on Bad Street with Chris Zellner about great Memphis moments. And Jimmy Hart's a part of so many of those moments because he was so important to the promotion. So we're going to have our First Family. You know, he's the guy who influenced Cornette to be so great. And we're going to have Jimmy Hart from Memphis as our mouthpiece.
Okay.
Okay. And, and we're going to bring in guys from the Time Machine, because Lawler is timeless. You can fight any of these guys.
And we're going five guys? Is that what we're going to do?
We want to do five? We can do five guys, okay. Yeah. We can do, we'll do a tag team, a big enforcer type, a big good-looking, cocky main eventer, and a little shit type who can get his ass kicked.
All right, well, for my big muscle guy, we mentioned him before. We're going to use him in one of these stables. I think Brock Lesnar.
Okay, yeah. So he's going to be our big destroyer. You know, one of the things that they did in Memphis a lot, especially, you know, because guys like Sid and Undertaker got their career started in Memphis, is they would bring in the big unbeatable monster that Jerry Lawler had to conquer. It was Kamala. It was Lord Humongous, you know, who Sid was under a mask. It was Mean Mark, but I think he had another name. Was he the Night Stalker, maybe? I don't remember his name in Memphis, but Mark Callis. So they would bring these monsters in to try and beat him off. So Brock Lesnar is like the perfect monster, you know. So I like Brock Lesnar as a monster. As a tag team, okay, I'm working for a tag team. What about this one? Fit Finley and Steven Regal.
Yes, I like that one a lot.
And it could be like, you know, because like they worked really well as a tag team under King Booker, right?
Yep.
So we can even bring in like, you know, 2005, 2006 era Regal and Finley. You know, now if you want to get their primes, you're doing 94 Regal and not like 96 Finley. But
yeah, let's do that. I like it. We're going all the time.
As a tag team, we're doing Finley and Regal. So.
All right. How about heel like 2013-ish CM Punk? As our cocky guy who gets smacked around.
Okay. Yeah, I like it. So, and then he's going to have Brock as kind of the enforcer, which I kind of don't like the CM Punk thing only because of it reminds me of like how him and Paul E had like a really great dynamic, but it just didn't work for what the company was going for at the time.
Right. Well, it was working for
us. So, like putting Brock Lesnar and CM Punk in the same thing just kind of reminds me of that Paul E dynamic. I don't know, but okay. We like putting CM Punk in there.
We need our main eventer.
Man, CM Punk could be our main eventer too.
Yeah, but he fits that brash, smarmy a-hole.
Yeah.
Better right now for us, I think. I think so.
Main eventer, I would say who do you think? I was thinking 1988 Barry Windham.
Oof, okay, I like that one too. I was thinking 87, 88 Savage as a heel.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Okay. You know what I like better? I like Windham and Savage as part of the thing, taking out CM Punk. But that's just me.
Okay. Well, Punk can come in later, like we talked about earlier. Like you have those five, and then maybe Savage turns, and you bring Punk in as the new leader. You know,
right? And then you have like Punk fight Savage.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's what we're doing. So Savage,
You take one guy who was a skinny fat Barry Windham, and then you lose him for another guy who's skinny fat CM Punk.
Yeah, I like the Punk Savage though. I think we go Savage. Because Savage is more likely to get really hot and over and turn. So we go Savage, Windham, Finley, Regal, Brock. And you have Savage eventually turns face. They kick him out and they bring in Punk as the new leader.
Love it. Love it. So how much time do we have? Because I can do this all day.
We got about, 5 minutes, Dan?
Correct.
Okay. Well, here's one. So can we go back to a time period?
Sure, whatever.
Okay. So how about we go to 2000? You have The Rock on top, right? He's your main face, big star. and let's eliminate the corporation, the DX corporation stuff. And we bring in Bobby Heenan. He's, you know, hasn't had cancer yet. He's a little old, whatever, but, you know, he's so angry at his shit WCW run that he wants one more run in the spotlight. He wants to come
prove
in.
That he's still the greatest manager of all time.
And he brings in the Heenan family. Vince McMahon's off TV for a while. We need a new heel stable. And we need to take the belt off The Rock. The Rock is our champion. All through the summer of 2000, the Heenan family coming off WrestleMania. Rock never loses the title of Triple H, or he beats Triple H for the title at WrestleMania 16. And the next night, the Heenan family debuts. Who are you putting in this stable?
Okay. Well, first, let's get a tag team. Okay. So we're looking at tag teams in 2000, right?
Yeah.
Which, man, they're kind of looking at a down period in tag teams here, or even wrestlers, right?
I mean, you got the standard WWF teams. You have Edge and Christian, you have the Hardys, you have the Dudley Boys.
Yeah, they're already there, though. I mean, Rock faced those guys plenty of times.
You had the FBI, you had Nunzio, and was it Mama Luke? Was he with Mama Luke by then?
Yeah, that was good. You know what? I think, you know, and these guys were WWF a year later for sure and regular. How about Tajiri and who I guess Tajiri was pretty nasty in tag team. Who would you tag team Tajiri with? Because I always like foreign heels. The time period is what's screwing me up. Do we have to pick people from that time period?
Well, I mean, you can go a couple years back or forward. So, I mean, if a guy didn't show up until like 02, 03, you can bring him in. Like, we could bring, like, Angle. I don't know. Oh, he was around.
Yeah. I kind of like the Bobby Heenan Kurt Angle pairing.
Yeah, that's a good one. And Angle was getting started, so hitching him to Bobby's not the worst idea. Like, we knew he could talk already, but.
Right. I like that pairing. Who would you save from WCW? Because you would save Goldberg, right?
Yep. But he's not going to come in as a heel.
Right. But I'm just listing people that like you know, like when we talk about WCW, like in those last time. Would you bring in Scott Steiner, who was a hot heel in 2000? And he's working with The Rock, so he's not going to get sandbagged like he did with Triple H, right?
Yep.
So he might actually work a decent match or two. So Steiner was a plus in 2000. How about?
Man, this really was a rough time.
It was because WWF was hot, but ECW was on its last legs, right? Like they're really Tajiri is like your highlight in ECW. Okay. And like your Mama Lukes and Super Crazies and Psychosis and those guys. How about this guy for a trash talker? Talked about him earlier, Steve Corino.
Yeah,
Steve Corino was pretty great in 2000. He's going to be your trash talker who's going to hide behind. Who would be a nice monster to put in there? It doesn't even have to be a good wrestler. Just a guy Steve Corino can hide behind. If you need to.
Sally, Big Sally Graziano.
Big Sally,
though. I'm trying to, I mean, guys that, how about Mike Awesome? He was pretty hot in 2000 before he started all the fat lady stuff.
But we got to keep him in a tag team. You don't want to.
Well, how about Awesome and Tajiri? Or you want to keep Corino in the tag team? How about Awesome and Corino?
Yeah, Awesome and Corino will be fine. This is by far our weakest stable.
Yeah, it's tough. It's a weird time period because there was a lot of talent around, but like you said, a lot of it was already fighting The Rock. You know what I mean?
Right. I like Kurt Angle, Scott Steiner. Dude, in a way, it almost feels like the Main Event Mafia, doesn't it? Because I was about to suggest Booker T.
There you go. We're building 2006 TNA's top table stable. I almost said Booker as well. You got some cruiserweights you could bring in as the bumper. You know, you got like Kidman was having arguably one of his better years.
He was fine.
The feud with Hogan.
Helms. He had Sugar Helms. Yep. Sugar Shane.
Candido, Vampiro.
Candido, too small.
Ralphus. Ralphus.
All right, guys.
David Arquette was champion.
Just to wrap it up, let's put Sugar Shane Helms in there.
There you go.
As your new guy who can bump and team with all these guys.
So Angle, Steiner, Helms, awesome, Carino.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not bad.
That's all right. It's all right.
Okay. Well, that was fun. Another quick segment here tonight. We're flying through these things. Hopefully my mother-in-law's got some ice cream waiting for me upstairs. I can have some Mountain Dew. I'm going to go yell at some people on a message board. And then we'll be back with fall number 3 here at the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast.
Do you watch pro wrestling? Do you love pro wrestling? We do too. And there's only one podcast feed that you can't miss.
PWO PTBN Podcast Network. That's the pro wrestling only place to be nation podcast network.
We have a host of brilliant shows dedicated to wrestling past and present.
Whether it's the territories, Japan, Lucha, old school or new school, we've got something for you.
Get a dose of history on Exile on Bad Street with Chris Zellner.
Listen to reviews of current pay-per-views on the PTBN reaction shows. Not just WWE, but New Japan, Ring of Honor, and NXT. And get your weekly update on everything else that's going on in the indies, Lucha, and beyond on This Week in Wrestling.
Relive WCW Supercards on Where the Big Boys Play with Parv and Chad.
Join Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave on one of the very best shows for super hardcore nerds wrestling culture.
Go deep into WWF history and discover the Bob Backlund and Bruno Sammartino eras on Titans of Wrestling.
Don't miss the Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston.
You can get the full archive of Goodwill Wrestling with Good Old Will from Texas.
There's tag teams back again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze.
Then there's the only pro wrestling game show, Brainbuster, with me, Johnny Sorrow, and a panel of great guests every time.
Get them all on one feed.
PWO-PTBN Podcast Network.
You know you want to hear it.
We are back here, episode 6 of the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast, and we are flying. There may be no power at my house, but we are all powered up here, the two-man power trip, and we're heading towards fall number 3. So Daniel McGinn, tell us, where are we headed next?
Try to be best, cause you're only a man, and a man's got to learn to take it.
Guys, it is time for the Dangerous 5, and we're going to get your 5 favorite tag teams of all time.
All right, so we've done our favorite singles wrestlers. That was way back in, I believe, episode 1. So we're going to do tag teams. And, Will, I think I have our list here. So why don't we quickly read who they were. No, we don't have them. I thought we had them listed. Dan, you failed me yet again. All right, let's just do tag teams. Will, give me, you want to go back and forth, I guess? Well, do you have any honorable mentions, teams that you have on the outside looking in? Maybe like would be like the 6th and 7th spots?
Yeah, there are a couple.
And I should qualify quickly. These are our favorite all-time tag teams. They are not who we think are the greatest teams, the best teams, the top teams, not based on drawing. Work. These are what 5 teams you just love. These are your favorite 5.
Right. There's a couple I want to shout out. One from Memphis, the Fabulous Ones. We talked about them at length on the most recent Exile on Bad Street. God, I can never say that right. On the most recent episode about Memphis, we talked about the Fabulous Ones. Want to give them a shout out. And another team that I want to mention that would probably be my they would probably be my favorite team of all time if they had an extended run, and that's Eddie Guerrero and Chris Jericho. I thought they worked so great as a tag team. I was so sad that like neither WWF nor WCW felt compelled enough to actually make them a permanent tag team.
Yep.
I thought they were awesome. I thought they were comedy gold. I thought that they worked really well, tagged in and out, played great heels when they were given a chance to shine together.
Very cool. So my honorable mentions, we're not getting into the debate again, but I'm going to say Demolition.
Boo.
Well, probably my first favorite team when I started watching, just because of where they're positioned. You know, I still consider them one of my favorites, just outside my top five. Another team I'm going to put here, and it's going to be, you're probably going to get it aggravated, but, and it's mainly because I didn't watch them growing up, and I've gone back and relived a lot of their stuff, but it's mainly the big stuff. So, like, I haven't seen a ton of their, the matches that would make them one of your favorites. That's the Midnight Express, right? So, I recognize fully their greatness, and if we're talking top tag teams of all time, they're easily in my top five, without a doubt. But as a favorite, they're just on the outside looking in, just because I haven't seen the volume of their work to make them, and I didn't grow up watching them in any way. So to me, they're not one of my favorites, but I recognize them as a top team.
I think during Christmas, you might get a package that'll change that.
I think
I'm going to have to give JR Christmas gift and make sure he is exposed to the greatness of the Midnight Express.
Okay, I like it. I'm ready for it. Now, how about you give me your fifth team?
Okay, this one, I had to think about it for about 3 seconds, and they're probably the most modern tag team on my list, just full disclosure, but they were awesome. They were awesome in Memphis, they were fun as hell in WWF, and they were great, actively great in ECW, and that is PG-13.
Nice.
JC Ice and Wolfie D. I had a chance to go through a ton of ECW footage a few years back, and PG-13, just these guys got it. If you want cool tag team double teams, they have that. If you want guys who can work as great heels, they're one of the best heel tag teams ever. If you want guys who could work as underneath baby faces, they had that. They understood tag team, you know, Southern classic tag team structure. So if they're heels, they're cutting the ring in two. If they're baby faces, JC Ice is playing Ricky Morton. Just a great, fun tag team that could go in the ring. They were modern, yet because of, you know, where they were raised in the wrestling business in Memphis, they had a classic edge to them. One of my favorite tag teams, PG-13.
All right, great choice. So my number five is a team I really enjoyed in WCW. And I loved in WWF just because of their squashes were phenomenal. We've been doing some of those Raw live watches back earlier this year, and they were just destroying people on Raw, and that is the Steiner Brothers. Any team that just comes out and uses brute force and doesn't give a shit about what they're doing and just pounds guys into oblivion is a match I can get behind and enjoy. They can wrestle 3-minute matches, 8-minute matches, 12-minute matches, and they're stiff all the way through. Even at the end when the Frankensteiner started getting scary and he started almost killing people, they were still fun to watch stiff.
Or right before he turned into Big Papa Pump when he was using the Steiner driver.
Oh, yes. Yeah, the screwdriver. Yeah.
The screwdriver. That was scary. That might be the scariest move ever in wrestling history.
I mean, some of my favorite matches of theirs are so good. Versus Bret Owen, he used the screwdriver in that match.
Yeah, he sure did. That's a great match. Legitimately great match.
And their match at Havoc 90 with the Nasty Boys, where they just beat the shit out of each other. Love that match. Even some of their like 96, 97 WCW stuff, because Nitro was very unconventional, and even their tag formula was unconventional. They had some fun little stiff fests with like Harlem Heat and Fire and Ice and all those teams, where they just clubbed the crap out of each other and the Nasty Boys. Just a team I love. I just love watching their squashes. Yeah. I love their energy. The way they played to the crowd, they felt like a force of nature when they came out.
You know, I don't object to the Steiners. I can easily see why somebody loves them. My biggest problem with the Steiners, and tell me if I'm wrong here, JR, is they were paired up with Harlem Heat and the Kevin Nash and Scott Hall a lot towards the end of their run, and those were just actively bad matches. And I don't necessarily blame the Steiners for that, because Hall and Nash never had any great matches as a tag team.
Sure. But I mean, by that point they were like cemented as one of my favorite teams just because of the years of squashing and beating the crap out of guys.
I think my biggest problem is when the Steiners were at their peak, was the peak of me not caring about wrestling.
Right.
And so when I hear people say, I can appreciate like the Owen Brett tag in WWF, some of the Beverly Brother tags, or even the stuff like against Sting and Luger, which was from 1991, or just destroying Japanese dudes on pay-per-view, or even in Japan, where they would like have great matches in Japan. It's just I had to watch that stuff on tape, so I'm really disconnected from them, you know, at that point. But I absolutely see why people love the Steiners. I'm not going to fight you on that.
All right, give me your number four.
My number four is a tag team made up, and I put them here. And these are two of my favorite wrestlers of all time. And people who listen to this podcast know that I'm one of the biggest Jerry Lawler fans of all time. And it's Jerry Lawler and his arch nemesis, Bill Dundee. They didn't team up often. In the early 90s, they would team up. You'd see them a lot on Dallas television when Memphis and Dallas were kind of co-headlining together. After Jarrett bought out the Dallas territory, they teamed up in Memphis when Memphis had a working agreement with AWA, and they became the AWA Tag Team Champions in 1987. And they teamed up in the late 70s, and they had some great matches in the late 70s. But I just thought that I really enjoyed the dynamic of arch enemies coming together. Because when they needed to vanquish a foe, the only person they thought could get the job done was the guy that they had bled the most with in the ring. I really like that dynamic where Jerry Lawler would tell you on television, I don't trust Bill Dundee. I don't like Bill Dundee. We will never be friends, but I know if I have to go to war, there's nobody I could trust to go to war more than Bill Dundee. And when they had that dynamic, man, they were just awesome. The same thing in 1983, right before they had a classic loser leaves town match. I think it was 83. Bill Dundee turned heel on Lawler and the Fabulous Ones in the studio, and it was like a classic angle. But it's just one of my favorite tag teams. That just watching them, it's like they had wrestled each other so often that when they were paired together, it was the perfect fit for a tag team.
Right.
So I just want to kind of give that little mini history lesson for one of my favorite tag teams that didn't tag that often.
Okay. I like it. And another team you can include in the Christmas package so I can learn some more about. How about that?
All right. Maybe next year, man. Maybe okay. Next year.
Sounds good. All right. So number four is my most modern team. It's a little bit more modern than your modern team. And that is we head to the 2000 stretch, and that's Edge and Christian. So a team, I was really, really red hot into wrestling in 2000. I was in college, junior, senior year, and I had a bunch of roommates that were all into it. Raw was an event every week for us. Even, the pay-per-views, we had a black box in our room, so we were watching all the pay-per-views. And Edge and Christian were really connected to us, just from it fit in the time, the humor, the inside lingo, the goofiness that was kind of in at that point, the almost like a retro team,
the 5 second pose,
yeah, all that stuff. Their team with Angle, all the goofy comedy, but then they could work in the ring too. You know, they go out there and have some good, garbage matches, some good high flying matches, all the TLC stuff, and they always came out on top. They were the top heel team of the group, and of course set up Edge for his run later. So Edge and Christian come in at number four for me, almost nostalgic at this point, I guess, but just because of how much fun I had watching them at that time in my life.
Let me ask you a question, JR, because I know you and Scott do the Place to Be rewinds, and I know for several years here you'd have Kevin Kelly on the show. When you rewatched those old Edge and Christian tags with the Hardys and the Dudleys, how they hold up? Because I haven't really revisited that stuff. I lived it, I experienced it, but I haven't gone back to really see if it holds up to the test of time.
I think they hold up if you look at it in the perspective of what it was at the time, and it was really refreshing and new, because the tag division had been so dead and so dormant in the WWF.
Yeah, no, that's true.
So if you look at them as how really they revitalized things, and it started with the Hardys and them at No Mercy in that ladder match. That's what really jump-started the rebirth of the tag division. Then the Dudleys came in. So, I mean, what can I say? They hold up just in a vacuum on their own. They probably sag a little bit. But that's only because of the volume of matches that came later that kind of aped their style and that was, you know, prevalent for a long time in the major promotions. But I think they were kind of the forebearers of that run of tag work where kind of garbagey, kind of flying, kind of spottish. I feel like they helped usher that in. They were kind of the grandfathers of it, and it was copied a lot in years gone that came after it. But I feel like they were, you know, really, really good at it and kind of set the stage. I think if you watch them in context and you understand what it was at the time, I think they hold up.
Okay. And the reason I asked is because we just had a really difficult time coming up with tag teams like from that era, 2000, because the Hardys, the Dudleys, Edge and Christian, they were kind of your big tag teams in 2000. So I was really curious about that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So where are we at? My number three?
You're number three.
My number three, we're going to go back to World Class. I talked about their theme song. They had a one-year run where they were the classic heel tag team. They're called the Dynamic Duo. They were Gino Hernandez and Chris Adams. Unfortunately, both had tragic ends to their lives, kind of that World Class curse. But back then, they were a great tag team. They lived it up. Like when these guys would do interviews, they would come out in their white pants. You know, I think this was pre Miami Vice, right when Miami Vice was just starting. They'd come in with their white pants, their dress up shirts, their pink dress up shirts. And you knew these guys were going to a nightclub. They were going to do tons of coke and sleep with hookers. You know, like they just, like you believed their gimmick. Like you believe that these two good looking young guys would come in and you believe they were jerks in real life. Like there were no pretensions that these were nice guys. Like you could believe that these guys were up to no good at all times.
I think we're going
to
say the Dynamic Dudes for a moment.
Never, man, never. But they had classic matches with Kerry and Kevin Von Erich. They had one of the best breakup angles of all time where they broke up. And unfortunately, for those who don't know, they did right after they'd broken up, they had a match on TV where Gino Hernandez blinds Chris Adams, okay, with the cream, the dreaded, or spray or something, I don't know. But he blinds Chris Adams. So when Gino Hernandez legitimately dies at the beginning of 1986, Fritz Von Erich, in his infinite wisdom, decides that when they announce Gino's death, they're also going to announce a second tragedy, the blinding of Chris Adams, who does an interview from England, you know, announcing his physical state of being blind. And they equated the two on TV of, you know, they gave equal importance to the blinding of Chris Adams and the death of Gino Hernandez. So Fritz Von Erich, Father of the Year, sure.
15 minutes, guys. 15.
All right, that's perfect. We're halfway through.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So for my number three.
Hold on, before you get number three, yes. Have you ever had a chance to watch Gino and Chris?
No. I've seen maybe one or two.
Oh man, okay.
Add it to the discs.
You know your Christmas list is getting longer here, right?
Santa Will's gonna hook me up. All right. So my number three is a team that was successful both in the NWA, WCW, and the World Wrestling Federation back in the late 80s. That is Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard. They were great as part of the Horsemen. They were great as the Brainbusters. And I like that they brought that style that they worked in the NWA over to the WWF. So they didn't necessarily, you know, mesh the WWF style. They brought in their own and made other teams, you know, forced to work their way. My buddy Scott always says the same, you know, same thing about them. They were the masters of like controlled mayhem. So their stuff always looked chaotic, like it was out of control, but they were always in control of the mayhem. They were creating the mayhem for the purpose of taking advantage of the match. I always thought it was an astute, you know, statement on his part, because if you watch a lot of the matches, it feels that way. They're always chaotic. They're always moving around, quick tagging, sneaking behind the back, and they seem like they're out of control. But when you really focus on it and you look at what they were doing, the psychology of it, they're really just trying to create mayhem to divert the ref, to divert the tag partner, to gain that extra advantage. So I always like them as, you know, a mix between intelligent, calculating heels, as well as, you know, great workers and you know, strength of Arn and the arrogance of Tully. And I thought they just meshed so well. You know, one of my favorite matches of theirs in WWF is just the destruction of Strikeforce at WrestleMania 5, where Rick Martel walks off and they just pick apart Tito slowly. But even the opening part of that match is such an NWA-feeling match thrown into the middle of one of the most WWF-feeling shows that they've ever done. It was such a, you know, just an outlier and a piece of fresh air on a card like that. So Arn and Tully, to me, rank in at number 3.
It's a great tag team. Probably somewhere in my top 10 as well, favorite tag teams. There's a reason that the Four Horsemen were never the same after Arn and Tully left. You know, Flair was the alpha male, but Flair was going to be successful with or without the Horsemen.
Right?
I mean, he's Ric Flair. You could always switch in. As much as I love Barry Windham, and I thought Lex Luger in 87 was an actively great wrestler, but before that you had Ole Anderson. You could always switch out that fourth member. You know, but Arn and Tully were the glue that really held the Horsemen together, while the other parts were interchangeable, and Ric Flair was Ric Flair. So as long as you had Arn and Tully there, up to no good, because they were just both classic all-time Southern heels, or just classic wrestling heels in general,
yeah.
As they proved by going to WWF and being successful there. There's a reason that the Horsemen were never the same when those two left. It's okay. It's okay if Barry Windham leaves, or Lex Luger leaves, or Ole Anderson leaves. You take away Arn and Tully, and the faction is done. So I like the pick.
All right. Who is your number 2?
My number 2. I really had a hard time with number 1 and number 2. I might flip it if we were talking about best tag teams or you know, versus favorite. I'm going Rock and Roll Express, man. I love them in Mid-South. They formed in Memphis, but they really broke open in Mid-South. And Bill Watts always says that when the Midnights and Rock and Roll came in 84, they saved his territory. And Jeff Jarrett sent them to Memphis as what we call blowjob tag teams, which is, you know, there's a famous story where Bill Watts and Jeff Jarrett were talking, and Jarrett looked at Bill Watts' house and his roster, and he's like, well, where's your blowjobs? And Bill Watts like, what are you talking about? He's like, well, you don't have anyone to bring in the ladies, you know, because Jarrett had just had all that success with the Fabulous Ones. And he, you know, brings in the Rock and Roll Express, and they explode as a great tag team. And then the peak of their career was Crockett, you know, obviously that 1985 through 87 period where the Rock and Roll Express were just hot, had classic tag matches with the Andersons, with the Russians, with the Midnights, with the Four Horsemen. Ricky Morton had great singles matches against Ric Flair. Just for that 2-year time period, they were clicking on all cylinders, and they were just an awesome tag team. And they came back as a tag team in Memphis. They even did a little short heel run, but they kind of had a second go around as one of the best tag teams in the world in the early 90s in Smoky Mountain wrestling for Jim Cornette's promotion. So the Rock and Roll Express, by far one of the best tag teams and one of my favorite tag teams. Just joy to watch them wrestle in the ring. And despite what people say, Robert Gibson is an actively good wrestler who, you know, was part of the team. And there's a reason Ricky and Robert were successful, whereas other tag teams that both guys were in weren't as successful as that one.
No arguments there. And I will say, nobody jacks off under a glass table while a hooker shits on it.
Oh, my goodness.
All right. My number 2, I know you're going to disagree with, but that's okay. And that is one of the best teams in the late 80s, early 90s, WWF, and that is the Hart Foundation, Bret Hart and Jim Neidhart. I love watching their matches. I love – oh, God, give me a break.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry.
Come on, man. You're killing my childhood. anyway, I love going back watching some of their heel stuff. from like 86 with the Killer Bees and then Strike Force, the Rougeaus. Later on, when they turn face, their matches back to back or alternating SummerSlams with Demolition, 88 and 90, I thought were very well worked as well. And I've been watching, you know, I always thought they were a team that relied on the Anvil's kind of nuttiness for their charisma. But watching more like the prime times and stuff from like 86 on the network, I've come to appreciate them more. They were kind of ahead of their time as like kind of goofy and that kind of charisma. Like they do those mating game stuff and some of their promos backstage had this kind of level of like, I don't know. They seemed like two guys that were just buddies that were a little bit goofy that happened to be good wrestlers. And like, so they kind of felt down homish almost in a way, just like two guys you'd hang out with at the bar in that stretch of 86, 87 as heels. But anyway, I just like the style they worked. I like the big power brute. I liked Brett being the smart technician that would come in. I thought they had some good double team moves. And to me, they were always positioned as even though they weren't the champions, like in, you know, 90-ish, 89, 90, they were still positioned as a top team because of the way they worked the match. And their match with the Brainbusters, SummerSlam 89, one of my favorites as well. So I give the Hart Foundation the nod here, my second favorite team.
I was giving you grief there, JR. But I actually liked the Hart Foundation as a kid. Watching them as an adult, they don't really do much for me. But as a kid, one of my favorite memories was them surviving at the end of the WrestleMania 2 Battle Royal.
Yep.
And Andre the Giant picking up Brett and tossing him onto the anvil outside.
Throwing the anvil out by his goatee.
As a kid, I enjoyed the Hart Foundation. You know, I mean, but like I said, I liked WWF Hart Foundation as a kid. I loved, you know, the classic NWA tag teams that were going on at the same time. And that's why those teams, you know, your Hart Foundation's Killer Bees, to me, they just paled in comparison to what was going on at Crockett at the time. You know, that's my only thing. I was giving you a hard time, but I actually enjoyed them as a kid myself.
Hard times, baby.
Should I go with my number one?
Let's do it.
Okay. Now, my number one.
Dan McGinn, they came in here and said, a computer going to take over your job after 6 months of the Dangerous Alliance producing.
What happened? What happened?
Hard times, baby.
Poor Dusty. Are we going to do something with Roddy Piper? Anyway, let's not.
The Hot Rod.
Yeah, let's not deviate off track. Number one, I got to be clear, Dennis Condrey and Bobby Eaton, the Midnight Express. Not the Bobby Eaton Stan Lane version, not the Norvell Austin Randy Rose version. We're talking about Dennis Condrey and Stan Lane. When they came in with the Rock and Rolls in Mid-South, I loved them then. Part of great classic angles and angles that we had seen. Some of them had already been done in Memphis. Like anytime you see a celebration, you would see Jim Cornette get his face put in a cake that had been done before in Memphis. You always had the part where they'd demonstrate the straight jacket, right? That'd been done before. But just when we talk about classic tag team wrestling, and a classic heel team, because Bobby Eaton could not talk. Dennis Condrey could talk, but he could only talk for people south of the Mason-Dixon line. He just, you know, Dennis Condrey was never going to get over someone who spoke in WWF, you know, unless they put him in like a complete hillbilly gimmick. Okay?
5 minutes, guys.
Oh, okay. I'll hurry up. But as a tag team, they were great. Dennis Condrey brought the evil side, more of the sadistic side to the team. Bobby Eaton was the high flyer, the innovator of the tag team. You know, we do these shows when we talk about tag teams, when we construct what if scenarios. I mean, you and I created tag teams during the stable game that we played earlier on tonight. The Midnight Express to me are the prototype, and I'm talking Condrey Eaton here, of the perfect tag team. That if you need a heel tag team, that's the kind of tag team I'm going to set up every day of the week. So I'll let you get yours in, and then we'll talk about it.
Sure. And again, nothing but respect for the Midnights. If we're doing a top tag team list, they're right, way up there for me. So my number one, another team that was just getting, you know, hitting their stride when I became a fan, immediately latched onto them, flashy, the way they worked the matches, going back and rediscovering a lot of the matches with a different lens than what I was watching at the time helped me appreciate them even more. And that's Shawn Michaels, Marginetti, the Rockers. Of course, Shawn Michaels would go on to be one of my favorites.
Sure.
As a solo guy, but as a tag team, going back and rewatching a lot of their stuff has brought me a new appreciation of a team that I loved even as a kid. You know, the match at the Orient Express at the Rumble, just a great 91 overall. And then the match with Haku and Barbarian at WrestleMania 7, one of my favorite WrestleMania openers of all time.
What about the stuff in the AWA with Buddy Rose and Doug Summers?
Yep, the feud there, the cage match, the bloodbath. But I was going to say, even that awesome kind of, was it 1990, that match of Powers of Pain at MSG that's kind of, you know, caught fire a few years ago.
Yeah.
Great match there. One of my favorite guilty pleasure WrestleMania matches of all time, them getting smacked around and squashed by the Twin Towers at WrestleMania 5. The feud with the Brainbusters. Yep. So just tons of Rockers matches, tons of Rockers moments. You know, just charisma through the roof in a different way. Weren't great promo guys, but you connected with the crowd, especially with, you know, fans my age at that time, 9, 10, 11. You wanted, this seemed so cool. You wanted to be like them. Just high flyers, you know, rock and roll music and all that stuff. I know it was a little bit old at the time. They had come a little bit late, but for me as a kid at that age, I was digging them. And like I say, going back, you kind of appreciate them in a different way. So I'm going to go with the Rockers. And by the way, shout out to their brief 2005 reunion where they had a match. I think it was a La Resistance on Raw. It was like they were walked out of a time machine. had such good chemistry out of nowhere yet again. So,
you know what? I like the Rockers, man. I'm a guy who, you know, because of my dislike of Shawn Michaels, I just, you know, have this personal aversion to him. Maybe it's because he's Triple H's best friend. I don't know. And I think his
They don't punish me because I'm your best friend. I mean, that's not fair.
No, not at all. But I mean, I think his religious shtick is hokey. You know, like, I don't really believe he's a religious guy. You know, I think it's a gimmick. But
2 minutes.
But I really like the Rockers. All of the things you said about, you know, them being a great tag team in that late 80s, early 90s, I agree with you. I think they are actively the best classic WWF tag team, you know, that's associated with the WWF. I'd put them over the Hearts. I'd put them over the Bulldogs, Demolition, you know, any of those teams. Blake, the Blake brothers, was the Beverly brothers, the Blake brothers.
Yes. Yep. Beverly brothers.
You know, I would put them over all of those tag teams because they worked really well together. I don't think they're the prototype of the perfect tag team, you know, but I like the dynamic they had in the ring. I thought they were the team that was most likely going to have a good match with any other tag team on the roster. You know, where I couldn't say that for the Bulldogs or for the Hearts or the Killer Bees or Strike Force. Like those other tech teams, it was kind of a crapshoot whether they had a great match or not. Whereas with the Rockers, it was pretty much a given you were going to get a show.
Dan, I want you to take a minute, give us a couple of yours before we're out of time here.
Yeah, without repeating a couple of them, I really had a soft spot back in the day for Power and Glory.
Yes.
Even once dressed as Glory for Halloween. That's a true story.
Oh, my goodness.
Another team that you guys didn't mention, but I always was a big fan of, particularly as a kid, was the Road Warriors / Legion of Doom.
Yes.
Was a big fan of them. Also, we mentioned Eddie Guerrero before, but I was really a big fan of Los Guerreros. Probably more so than I probably should, but I really enjoyed the Chavo, Eddie, you know, the goofball antics that they did as well.
Like during that classic SmackDown 6 era?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, well,
that's it. Time's up.
I was going to say, no one mentioned the Bulldogs. I was surprised the Bulldogs didn't get a mention.
So many great tag teams. It's so hard. Even if you want to look more modern, you know, Dan mentioned Guerrero's one of the world's greatest tag team. Haas and Benjamin had a hell of a run, too, for a stretch there. I really enjoyed them when they were with Angle, Team Angle. So
I would say that Cesaro and Kidd were an actively great team. The Shield recently, that's why I'm kind of excited about Harper getting back together with Wyatt. You know, I thought Harper and Rowan were a really good tag team.
Agreed.
The Shield, when they were a trio, were part of great tags. Cesaro and Swagger, surprisingly, were a really good tag team. So there's some modern ones, too, that you could throw on the fire.
All right. So all the falls are done. Our top five tag teams, Wills, was PG-13, Lawler and Dundee, Hernandez and Adams, Rock and Roll Express, Midnight Express, Mine were Steiner Brothers, Edge and Christian, Brain Busters, Heart Foundation, and The Rockers. So our three challenges done for the night, boys, and I have been up for a long time. No power, so why don't we just do 6 minutes of mail tonight, Dan McGinn? How's that sound?
No, come on, 16 minutes of mail.
6 minutes of mail, starting now.
All right, let's go in the middle, Dan. We're going to go 11 minutes of mail.
6 minutes of mail, beginning now.
We're going to the party. We're going to the game. We're going to the disco. We're going to cruise out, man. We're stealing people's mail. Stealing people's mail.
You've got mail.
Guys, our friend Charles, he writes, how would you book Mae Young joining Raven's flock?
All right, so here we go, right? So we have Raven's flock. And who of all, I mean, this is a very perverse, touched, sick, perverted group, right? They're all a little weird.
I got it. All a little messed up.
So who is like the most weird of them?
You know what I'm doing, man? I'm pairing her up with Scotty Riggs, the American male.
hang on. Let me go my way first. So I'm having the guy that doesn't care about anything. He's whacked. He wears dresses. He eats crayons. He doesn't give a shit. He just goes out there and suplexes people. And the reason why he maybe doesn't understand that Mae Young is old and, you know, beaten up and haggard and everything else, because he's got that lazy eye, Perry Saturn. His eyes are all crazy and kooky. So he's looking one way. He's seeing, you know, Major Guns. He's seeing these other women. And Paul Shock, whatever her name was. And he looks over. And, you know, Mae Young looks good to him. He's not getting that full peripheral vision. He's not getting the full look at her. So he starts bringing her around as this woman. And everyone else is like, dude, what are you doing? He's like, oh, she's hot. Whatever. I don't care. And then to prove that, you know, she's not who she is. She's not some beautiful woman. Raven just smacks her around, DDTs her on a chair. Mae Young can take it. She doesn't care. She can take all the bumps. But Saturn, that facilitates his leaving the flock, defending Mae Young, and then they become a couple, get married.
All right, so after Raven takes out Scotty Riggs' eye and he starts wearing the eye patch, he tells him he has to atone for his sins for sleeping around with all these young women, and that he has to realize that beauty is only skin deep and that it's what's in the heart that matters. And he brings out Mae Young, who was Scotty Riggs' biggest fan. And that, you know, if Riggs is truly going to reject his past, he has to embrace his new future with Mae Young.
And I think...
Bagwell. No. She never enters into the picture. And so, yeah, Riggs and Mae Young is kind of like your power couple in WCW. And then eventually... Riggs loses it when Mae Young leaves to go live with Lenny, Lane, and Lodi.
Now, I'll tell you when he loses it. When Raven wins the United States Championship at Spring Stampede, he has a live sex celebration with Mae Young the next night. He steals Riggs' girl, and Goldberg interrupts that and squashes Raven to win the U.S.
And spears Mae Young through the table, yeah.
There you go. We just booked Mae Young. That's the best booking you'll hear for WCW.
Wow. Thank you, Charles. On to Crossface Chicken Wing. Guys, we've had police officers, dentists, tax collectors, barbers, other professions. What profession should have been used as a wrestling gimmick but never was, and what worker would be a good fit for that gimmick?
I mean, we've covered it. There's been everything almost.
Yeah, we've had teachers. You know, Dean Douglas.
All right, how about like a fast food worker?
Plumbers.
We haven't had a Subway or McDonald's or something like that. Maybe Rob Feinstein doing like a Jared Fogle gimmick. We could do that.
Oh, man. Real life getting too close up. How about serial date rapist Bill Cosby?
Who's taking that one off?
Yeah. I don't know, man.
I'd say the king, but that's your boy.
Oh, man. Well, I mean, you know, I can't even argue with you on that.
We need a gimmick for Dan to drive his car in. I mean, something like, you know, like Alberto Del Rio had his beautiful Cadillacs and Rolls Royces. Eddie had the low rider. What's Dan riding in on?
Well, we know his car's paid off, so we know right. The repo man's not coming to repossess right. Dan's car anytime soon.
Yeah. producer, a podcast producer, and he drives in that beater up to the ring.
The worst gimmick ever. I know it was funny. Someone mentioned on the board, like when that question was asked, how about an electrician? And our friend Parv responded with Sparky Plug for electrician. Man, that's a hard question to answer.
A furniture salesman? We never had a furniture salesman.
We've not had a furniture salesman. We've never had a fast food worker.
Cable guy? That was big when Jim Carrey did the movie. We never had a cable guy character.
Or a pet detective.
That's right.
We can do our pet detective who has to go find Matilda.
Frankie.
Would the cable guy
that came out with Ricky Steamboat that one time?
JT, would the cable guy only arrive between 9 and 3?
Yes, there you go.
Okay.
Like, but you were scheduled for first hour Raw. Sorry, I told you I'd only be there between 11 and midnight, so I don't know what to tell you.
I'm going to go to our buddy Jason Greenhouse. Kind of a twist on an old concept. Guys, you have these three wrestlers on your roster. One can be your world champion. One you can make a jobber of the stars, and the other you can fire without being able to rehire. And your three wrestlers are 85 Hogan, 86 Flair, and 1998 Steve Austin.
What are the three?
Oh God!
One can be your world champ. One is a jobber to the stars. The other is fired and unable to be rehired.
All right, so I'm gonna preemptively strike here, Will, and I know it's gonna sound blasphemous. I'll make it Flair my jobber. And that's only because he's so good at making everyone else look good. Like, that's the perfect role for him.
Okay.
Of the three. I think, if we're trying to make a lot of money, I think you got to put Hogan and Austin above him as draws, as your champion. Right? So one of them has to go there. So I think Flair, as the job of the stars, is making everyone look good is a great role for him.
So who are you going to fire, Hogan or Austin?
Well, you look at it one of two.
The racist or the wife beater.
Right. So this is where I was going with it. I go with the guy who had the longer run on top and is more identifying on Hulk Hogan. Austin was arguably maybe bigger at his absolute peak, but burned out a lot quicker as well. So I'll go with Hogan, who's been drawing money since before JR had barbecue sauce, as Parv would say. But from 1984 through until he dropped N bombs left and right a few weeks ago, Hogan was making money. So I'll go with him.
Okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go probably completely opposite direction. I'm going to fire Hogan because I have a crystal ball that says that his inappropriate racism is going to hurt
30
the
years
sales.
Now? So even though you have 30 years of Hogan,
it's going to hurt the sales of my network and my Lifetime history specials.
Lifetime Network.
So I'm going to keep Ric Flair, okay? Because Ric Flair, I mean, you're not going to have to erase his WrestleMania matches, right? You're not going to have to erase his documentary from the network.
Right. He does not have a questionable outside the ring lifestyle at all. Yes, you're accurate.
I'm not saying he doesn't. I'm just saying that, he's had bad marriages and he's exposed himself a few times to some stewardesses and cocktail waitresses. But he was not on TMZ talking about his daughter dating black dudes.
Not yet.
What I mean?
Not yet. That's like if Charlotte married, what's his name? Bram.
Timbaland or something, yeah.
Bram, no? She married Bram, right?
Oh, yeah. So he's safe there.
He's good.
So I'm keeping Flair as my headliner because he's one of the greatest headliners of all time. I'm making Austin my jobber to the stars, and I'm firing Hogan for being a racist piece of crap.
All right. Well, I think that is a strong way. That was some strong mail for a quick segment. I think we really...
One more. Let's
all right, it. One more. Hurry up before I pass out. Dan, you got one more?
Dan McGinn? All right, so we're not doing one more.
Hi, sandbagged you. That's it. He disappeared.
Killing me.
All right, so we are out, Will. That was a fun sprint. The power outage put me in the basement, but we got through it. We made it happen, and it was a lot of fun. It was a fun episode. A lot of cool topics, some good mail as well. So I hope you get some rain soon so your drought will end. Dan, I hope you make it to alive wherever you ended up just now in the vortex somewhere. Hopefully no hail. Yes,
yeah,
you there?
You got a three-year-old. I have a dog who's Cujo over here, so we're all evened up.
Okay. Well, we'll save that extra mailbag question for next time. So we'll talk to you in a couple weeks. In the meantime, be sure to check out all the podcast fare, all the written pieces. We had our second installment of the excellent WWE Network Adventure, where a group of us are going through every show on the network chronologically. We're taking notes and putting some bullet points out there for you. We did the 1976 February 2nd MSG House Show. Also, Scott Criscolo and I had Armageddon 2004 with a Roddy Piper tribute. And Will, I believe there is an excellent Bad Street coming out, right?
Yeah, I just have to put that up. It'll probably come out about this a little bit after this show comes out.
Okay, so there you go. That'll be the Roddy Piper Exxon Bad Street tribute. If you listen to the Dusty Rhodes one, you know what's coming your way. How long did this one go, Will? Same.
Oh, no. The Roddy Piper tribute got canceled. That we will be doing one, but that's not the Exxon that's coming out is a one talking about Wildside, the promotion that AJ Styles got started on. So
okay,
look for
great.
That. I wasn't a part of the show, but I'm actually editing the show to put out. So that's the show to look forward to.
Okay, cool. Well, be sure to keep an eye on the Piper one. That's coming as well. And we have some other Piper tribute stuff up as well, plus all the other usual accoutrements. So PlaceNation.com, Facebook.com/PlaceNation, Twitter, Place Number 2B Nation. That is Dan McGinn. That is Will. I'm JT. We are out. We'll talk to you next time. Take care.